Our reading today comes from a text that is sacred to many of us in the Unitarian Universalist world, the Huffington Post. This is from a blog that was written by Marilyn Sewell, who is the pastor emerita of First Parish in Portland. We are a free religious faith, and so have no creed. And as freedom is wont to do, our faith invites a certain degree of wackiness and abuse. But if that's the price of freedom, then I still choose freedom. Our faith, of course, does have requirements. To become a Unitarian Universalist, you make no doctrinal promises, but you are required to do much more. You are required to choose your own beliefs. You promise, that is, to use your reason and your experience and the dictates of your conscience to decide upon your own theology. And then you are asked to actually live that by that theology. You are asked to take your chosen faith very seriously. In a very real sense, all theology is autobiography, is it not? Our experience, real and vicarious, is what informs our sense of reality, our internal picture of the way the world works, what our values are. We believe what we know is true, that is, our felt knowledge, not what we are told is true. In the final analysis, how can a person who wishes to live with integrity do other than that? When I entitled today's sermon "Toward a UU Theology of Social Action," I have to admit that it made me a bit nervous. One reason is that it could be quite the undertaking. I imagined myself reading theology books from the 1800s, compiling them into a sermon that nobody would enjoy hearing. But I didn't do that. You're welcome. The second thing that made me nervous was the use of the word theology. I was actually a little concerned that nobody would come today. So thank you for showing up. Coming from two Greek words, we have theos, which means God, logia, which means the study of. Literally, it translates to mean the study of God. Yet I know that for myself and for many others who have had experiences with theologies that are damaging and toxic, that word can have some baggage. So I'd like to explain what I mean here by theology. And I will do so by starting with a story. There's a tale told about Alexander the Great encountering an Indian sage. The story goes that while he was on his way conquering through India, Alexander happened upon said sage. "What are you doing?" asked Alexander. "Experiencing nothingness," said the sage. And then the sage turned the question to Alexander. "What are you doing?" Alexander responded that he was going out to conquer the world. At this point, both men begin to laugh at each other, thinking that each of the other was absolutely ridiculous and wasting their lives. And in order to understand the reaction, we first need to know what caused them to view life so differently. Alexander was the son of Zeus, the head of the Greek gods. At least this is what his mother had to say, who herself claimed to be a descendant of Achilles. And it was also confirmed by an oracle in Egypt, so it had to be true. And Alexander grew up with stories of the adventures of Hercules, of Jason and the Argonauts, of Achilles. He loved reading the Iliad. His heroes and his gods were recounted in stories of conquest and valor and strength. The Indian sage that was sitting there experiencing nothingness also grew up hearing stories, but they were very different stories. Like that of Bharata, found in the ancient Indian Sanskrit epic of the Mahabharata. In the story, Bharata, from the age of 6, is given the nickname Sarvadamana, or the subduer of all, for his ability to seize and control wild animals. He grew to be a conqueror, controlling the entire earth and all of the worlds above. For his final conquest, he decided to scale the holy Mount Meru. Upon arriving at the summit, he would plant his flag to show evidence that he was the first conqueror of all creation. However, when Bharata reached the top, he looked out over thousands of flags placed by first conquerors of the world, all of whom had been forgotten to history. Bharata's eyes were opened, feeling insignificant, and realizing the folly of his life up to that point, he renounced his rulership, consecrated himself to the gods, and attained nirvana. So here we have Alexander and the sage, two men from very different cultures and shaped by very different stories. Alexander, son of a god and descendant of heroes, formed by myths and stories of war and glory and dominion, told that there is one single, all too short life to live, determines that his life should be spent seeking the glory and the power from the stories that shaped him. The sage, also immersed in his culture's myths and stories, who is told that wealth and power are fleeting, that this life is one of thousands of rebirths that will continue almost indefinitely into the future, decides to abandon earthly passion for inner peace. Two men, both outside of the norm, both seeking to live well, and both reaching drastically different ideas about what it meant to do so. And this was because they lived, as all humans do, within a narrative, within a set of myths and stories and experiences that constructed their own subjective understanding of the world and of their place in it. Their eyes looked over the world and at others, viewing everyone and everything through the lenses of the stories that had shaped and had formed them. And this holds true almost 2.5 millennia later. All of us gathered here today live within a narrative. The myths and the stories that we have been told, the experiences that we have had, all of these things shape our view of the world and the ways in which we engage with it. And some of these narratives are beautiful, and some are ugly. Some are healthy, and some are toxic. Some are informed, and some are based on ignorance. For good or for ill, these narratives construct the reality in which we live. That is why it is so vitally important that we understand examine, and clarify the stories that we have been told, the stories that we tell to others, and especially the stories that we tell to ourselves. On occasion, we may have to take out a holy sledgehammer to smash down any walls that have been built up from these views and these stories that separate us from others. At other times, we may need to reach out holy hands to write new stories and open holy lips to speak those stories aloud. And this is what I mean by moving toward a theology of social action. Being aware of, challenging, and creating anew the stories that shape us and form us and hold us and inspire us in our work of making the world more just. And this is no easy task as Unitarian Universalists. Many of the religious traditions of the world have very defined theologies, individual sacred texts, clear dogma that is to be accepted by individuals who belong to that community. There is an orthodoxy, a clear theological narrative that unites the tradition. And there's absolutely nothing wrong with that. This isn't meant as a critique. But from its beginnings, Unitarian Universalism has emphasized the freedom of each individual to determine their own path of truth, to find inspiration in their own journeys and stories, to have unity in diversity instead of unity through uniformity. What unites us is our freedom and a set of common principles, not creeds or catechisms or dogmas. The Unitarian Universalist Association holds to 7 principles with which most of us are all familiar. But these principles are drawn from a variety of sources, what the website calls the sources of our living tradition. And these are direct experience of that transcending mystery and wonder affirmed in all cultures, which moves us to a renewal of the spirit and an openness to the forces which create and uphold life. Words and deeds of prophetic men and women which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. Wisdom from the world's religions which inspire us in our ethical and spiritual lives. Jewish and Christian teachings which call us to respond to God's love by loving our neighbors and ourselves. Humanist teachings which counsel us to heed the guidance of reason and the results of science and warn us against idolatries of the mind and the spirit. And finally, spiritual teachings of earth-centered traditions which celebrate the sacred circle of life and instruct us to live in harmony with the rhythms of nature. For myself, and I would assume for many gathered here today, each of these stories, each of these sources, brings to my mind a story. The stories that have shaped us and have influenced the personal narratives in which we live, our own theologies. There are 2, though, that especially stand out for me in relation to my own theology of social action. The first is words and deeds of prophetic men and women which challenge us to confront powers and structures of evil with justice, compassion, and the transforming power of love. I remember when I was about 13 years old watching an episode of the 700 Club on CBN, which lets you all know the terrible taste in television programming that I had as an evangelical youth. This particular episode sticks out in my mind because it was focused on a church that had come out in support of the LGBTQ community and its rights. It was shocking, scandalous, but also really exciting. I was well aware of my sexual orientation at this point, and I had never heard of a church that would welcome people like me. I still remember the image of the old stone church with its rainbow flag fluttering in the wind. By coming out in support of the LGBTQ community in the 90s, a position that certainly wasn't common or accepted amongst most churches of that time, or even this time, this church had made itself a target for criticism and ostracism. That bold move and the story it told, that became part of my story. I realized you didn't have to be a Gandhi or a Harriet Tubman to affect change in the world. A single church or a single minister standing up for what was right, speaking out for truth and love, though unpopular, could have an amazing and a powerful impact. It taught me that a theology of social action must include the importance of standing up and standing out and speaking uncomfortable truths for the sake of justice. The next source that caught my attention was wisdom from the world's traditions, which inspires us in our ethical and spiritual life. My faith journey has taken me along many winding turns. And I think so much of that is because there is so much beauty that I've found in each of the traditions. And each of them speak about the common themes of the importance of love, of welcome, of hospitality, kindness to the stranger and the oppressed. There is one particular story from the Jewish tradition of Lurianic Kabbalah that has always spoken to me, that discusses the idea of tikkun olam, usually translated as repairing the world. The story goes like this. That when the divine decided to begin creation, it realized that it was taking up all of the space. There was no space to place the creation. In order to allow space, the divine contracted in upon itself, leaving an opening in which to place the universe. In that space, divine light and essence began to emanate, bringing about the first human. And from that first human, the light of the divine shone out through its ears and its nose and its eyes. But the light from the eyes, that was powerful. It was actually too powerful. So the divine decided that it needed to be contained in vessels. However, the light proved too strong even for the vessels, which shattered and flung divine sparks out into that empty space. And this is what brought about our physical universe and all of humanity. In tikkun olam, in this repairing of the world, in creating justice and making connections with others, and in healing our damaged earth, we are taking those divine sparks that are isolated and reuniting them, creating something brighter and stronger in the process. And this story taught me that the work of social action is, in itself, a spiritual act and a connection with that which is divine within all of us and within the world around us. These are just a couple of the stories that have shaped the narrative of my life and of my theology of social action. These are the truths that create the subjective reality in which I live, that inspire me to work for justice even when I am physically or emotionally exhausted, or when I am consumed by my own troubles and feel uninspired to do so. But they don't have to be yours. As the fourth principle states, Unitarian Universalism calls us to a free and responsible search for truth and meaning. And that's what I encourage all gathered here to do. Ask yourselves, what are the stories that are shaping my narrative of the work of justice? What is my own theology of social action that keeps me working for a more just world, even when I'm tired or feeling uninspired? What stories do I need to review or change? What are the stories that I am speaking out into the world around me in my words and my actions? And the same questions should be asked about our first parish, community, and the UUA as a whole. What is the story, the narrative, the theology of social action within which we are living and within what we are telling to our children and our friends, our neighbors, and the world? We must examine them to determine if they bring healing or harm, unity or division, inclusion or exclusion. And when we've come to an awareness of the stories that have formed us, when we've dealt with those stories that were untrue and hurtful, when we've created new and beautiful stories to take their place, stories that inspire us toward justice for ourselves, our communities, and our world, it is then that we have begun to move toward our own personal theologies of social action. And my hope is that together we can do the hard work of building and proclaiming these narratives, these theologies, and even more so, the harder work of living them out. Amen.